Testicle, 1, 2, testicle.
My balls, my lovely lady balls. Check them out. I put my dick in your bum, my bum is in your dick hole. Dick's in my dick hole. Touching dicks like a Chinese finger trap.
What's your opinion on foreskins?
I mean, if they're there, they're there.
Yeah, you're not a hater?
Whatever. It's just everything's weird down there. There's just always too much skin.
Yeah.
Yeah, too much hanging fruit down there. You know what I'm saying, dog? Jimmy, you know what I'm saying, Jimmy? Poor Jimmy. If there was a mouse in the house and Jimmy's finally, after a few months, he's just fucking cottoned on that there's a mouse and now he's just fixated on the part of the fireplace. But it's good though. Look at him. He's staring at it now. Just staring at it like, how fucking
he's a complete psycho.
Yeah,
complete
it's a
psycho.
It's good though because that mouse needs to know who's boss. Fucking Jimmy Chocolate Chip is. Jimmy Chocolate Chip at your service. Your Majesty's service.
Who was the boss in Who's the Boss?
It was Angela.
It was
no, Mona.
Angela.
Mona,
pretty much.
Mona,
yeah.
The mum. Or Samantha.
This is. Should we just watch it real quick?
You know, Tony Danza was in my repertoire.
No, I didn't.
Did you?
I am one of your hosts, Dr. Damien Gibson. I didn't go to 7 million years of Tony Danza school to be called Ray Romano. Thank you very much. I couldn't think of that. That sucks. Anyway.
Deborah.
Oh, come on, Deborah.
Deborah, Robert.
Our other co-host in the blue corner is the Italian Gelden. It's Kelly. Big me. Whoop. Want to fight about it? I'll fucking kill you. I'll show you my Tony Danza impersonation for Stuka.
Nicholas, my Tony Danza.
Here she is.
Mate, Jimmy.
This is going to drive me.
Yeah, it's going to drive me crazy. I know. Maybe just put like the basket in front of it or something. His little tail is just like this little corner of the room where he's just like, because I don't want to yell at him because he's doing the right thing. Like, get the mouse. Yeah, like a little cat. Get the mouse. Look at him. He's just got his little fucking, he's trying to get in there. Anyway, that's exciting.
So frustrating. What have you been watching this week without me?
What have I been watching? Well, I once again am rewatching The Sopranos. And listen, I'm going to say something right now. And what I'm about to say is not popular. Well, it's not going to be popular in this room by 50% of people. I'm rewatching The Sopranos. And listen, I'm going to just dob you in, Damien, to our 36 subscribers. Because I am. I think that you are. Insanely incorrect. Stop doing Handsome Dan from Wayne's World to me. I think that you're really, really incorrect, and I'm going to put it out there to the people that you, I love you very much, and I think you're very intelligent, very smart.
Here she is,
but
the
there's
people's
one
champ.
Thing that you could not be more wrong about, and that is you said that's The Sopranos. Is what?
Bad.
Bad what?
Everything.
Bad writing?
Yeah, I don't think it's written very well. I don't think it's directed well. I don't think it's funny. I think people are like, it's such a funny show. It's like, I don't think it is at all.
I think that
the
you
tone
are.
Tone depresses me. I described it as the Indiana Jones Chronicles for Goodfellas. Sopranos is the Indiana Jones Chronicles to Raiders of the Lost Ark as... Because Sopranos is just a shitty fucking Goodfellas ripoff. Half the cast of Goodfellas are in fucking The Sopranos.
But Sopranos is so well made and well written.
It's not.
I love you, but you could not be more wrong.
It's not. It's shot on fucking video. Like shit.
You're
wrong. It's just bad.
You're wrong.
What has anyone else from the show done since it ended?
Because those characters, okay, first of all, Edie
if
Falco.
If everyone was so fucking, okay, what's she done?
Nurse Jackie.
Oh,
that went for like
genius.
8 seasons. That was huge.
Mate, fucking Supergirl went for 7 seasons. That doesn't mean shit.
Yeah, we watched it.
I watched it. And I'd rather watch Supergirl than
Listen,
The Sopranos.
I'm going to let the haters come back to you because you could not be more wrong about The Sopranos.
I can bring it on. Come at me. I will
you
beat
so
every
wrong.
Single one of you in an
and
argument.
And the thing is, the other day I was watching and there was an episode where, what's his name from Rocky was in it?
Oh, Paulie.
Paulie from Rocky.
Yeah.
Burt
Young.
That
got my attention for like 2 minutes.
So Burt Young is in an episode. He plays... Bobby Bacalarari's father, who ends up murdering a monkey who attacks someone on the street. Anyway, so Burt Young, and he's got lung cancer and he has the asthma attack while he's driving, all sorts of stuff. Like, it blows my mind. And you were like, oh, now I really, really think that you could not be, I love you so much and we're getting married, but I really feel like, isn't it possible, Damien? Isn't it possible that you could be wrong?
No.
No, you're wrong.
It's
you're wrong.
It's
I'm
not
possible.
I'm
telling you it is.
Listen to me.
The scripts in these shows are incredible.
They're not.
The characters are so well written.
Mate,
they are so dimensional.
They might be okay written mobsters, but again, why do I give a
it's
fuck
not about
these
it's
people?
About the dimensions of how every character is written. Every character is written in such a strong way. That there is so many dimensions to every character, you know? Like, even, like, something as simple as, I was watching this special where they were talking about, like, something really small with, like, Carmella and the way she talks to her housekeeper. And when she motions to them, she, like, lifts her hands up and then motions with her finger to the maid, like, come here, like, kind of like that. And then you see her do it later to a friend of hers. And it's like in the first episode. And it just really establishes what kind of person she is and they are. And it's status-wise. It's very good. And that's why I can rewatch it because it's good, man. And also another show you didn't like, Fleabag.
What's this? What is this fucking gotcha journalism that you're doing here? Where you just like...
Because the show we're going to talk about has got someone from Fleabag in it.
Yeah, cool. Everyone does, you know, shitty Listen. Stuff when they're starting out. Here's my theory, right? Yeah. Here's my thesis. The golden age of television that everybody our age bangs on about wasn't that good. I think people just love the fact that they could watch things on demand. And things were like shot at a slightly better resolution. And there was, you know, some half decent storytelling being told. But most of it is not that good.
What's the best
But because
TV
it
show
was on
time?
HBO. Oh. That is a good question. I don't know if I have a favorite. Like a
like even like. Even
because the nature of television doesn't allow for high art. It doesn't. It is by its nature low art. So, I don't know. I would have to think about that.
I don't agree with that either because...
Well, streamers have changed the game a little bit, but previous to that, just through the nature of having advertising and stuff, it was very hard to make high-quality television product. It just is because you're trying to fit things into 22
cable
minutes.
Cable television changed all that. All of the best TV shows that had money were made with cable money.
When was that?
The Sopranos, HBO, Sex and the City, HBO, Mad Men, AMC. Come on. All of these cable shows started making Game of Thrones. They all started putting money behind TV shows and they were all cable shows. They weren't fucking NBC, PBS bullshit. All that was reality TV show.
What are you Maybe talking half about hour. PBS bullshit?
I'm saying regular TV shows did not invest money into good television shows. They only invested money.
Neither did HBO.
They only invested money in cheap three-camera comedies.
I'm saying, listen, there's stuff in the golden age of TV that I really like 6 Feet Under, I love. Dexter,
HBO.
Dexter I loved. Like, all right, what are you fucking got shares in HBO or something?
I'm just saying.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, Jesus.
HBO? It's like talking to a Collingwood supporter.
Who made Dexter?
That's Showtime.
Oh, Showtime, yeah. Okay.
And Breaking Bad, which I loved. Breaking Bad. And it's weird because I'm starting to hear backlash towards Breaking Bad, and I feel the same way about that as most people do about The Sopranos, where it's like, no, it's brilliantly written. The cast is amazing. Only goes for 5 seasons. There's a complete circle with the story. But I don't think, nothing, and I'm not trying to be a dickhead here, I'm not trying to be a wanker, but TV shows don't stay with me as much as films do.
Mm.
They just don't. And I think because of the serialized nature of it, it kind of downplays the format isn't as conducive as film to having high impact on me for some reason. If you love The Sopranos, that's great, but I don't. And I think what tends to happen, you know, and I'll even cite something that I adore in this, is that over time things get pinpointed as being the best, and then conventional wisdom, if you go against it, you come across as a crazy person. So like the Beatles, for example, are considered as the best band of all time. No arguments, no nothing, blah, 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 blah. And that has just gained momentum with each generation that discovers them and goes, oh my God, they're fucking amazing. Mm. But they may not be the best. Like I think they are. But they may not necessarily be the best rock band of all time. You know what I mean? But it gets to this point of like, if you're a musician or a music lover and you say that you don't like the Beatles, then you're dismissed as a fucking idiot because you don't know anything.
What I think is happening, that's not the conversation we're happening. The conversation we're happening is that you're someone...
You can't handle that I don't like your favorite TV show.
No. That you like, I can look at something and go, that is brilliant, that is incredible, that is amazing. However, I don't like it, not my taste, right? Like, there are TV shows like Breaking Bad, I kind of got into, but it never really hit me like other people. But I can still see it and go, yep, I acknowledge that it's very good, blah blah blah, all sorts of stuff. I can put it on a pedestal, but say it's not my bag, baby, you know what I mean? But I feel like when it comes to something like The Sopranos, I feel like as a writer, you should be able to go, look, it is a great show, but I just don't like it. I don't like the people. I don't like the storyline.
But I don't think it is a good show. And I don't think it is well written.
But this is where I think we're different.
So why would I say that if I don't think that?
Because I think you're wrong.
Well, good for you. That's cool, man. We're allowed to disagree.
And you don't like Mad Men either.
No, that's not true.
Okay, good.
I have watched the first season and a half of Mad Men, and for some reason, I never went back. But not at any point did I go, this is shit, I don't like it.
I would rewatch Mad Men with you. I've rewatched it a million times. I would go back, and like when we watch like television at night, you know, with dinner and stuff, watch an episode.
Yeah,
you know,
I think
it goes for 40 minutes. I think I'd totally watch an episode with you.
Okay,
but I would love to.
Ants in your pants about the golden age of TV here, it's like your football
really well
team
written
or something.
Shows, man. Just, you know what it is? I just love a TV show where characters are just really well written, really well constructed. You don't.
Why do you like The Sopranos then?
Anyway, just rewatching that, and then I rewatched Rocky IV, and then I think I've been watching Law and Order still. And anything new? I think I tried to watch a few documentaries and then just kind of like, just couldn't be fucked.
Documentaries called Murder Crime, Murder Crime Files.
If she didn't help that man, she'd still be alive.
Yeah, God. You know what?
She breathed oxygen and she was murdered. Yeah, what'd you watch?
You know what I watched? Guess.
Bosch.
No.
Dexter.
Nah.
You dick.
Nah, I watched a film called Ghostbusters 2 with this hot chick called Callie.
Oh, yeah, we were.
and it
Ghostbusters
2
is good.
Fucking fun.
It's good.
And I don't understand why Ghostbusters 2 gets such a fucking bum rap.
Because it's real good.
There are some problems with the story. It does, like, sort of two-thirds of the way through the film, you're like, hang on, what's happening? Like, it feels like the Ghostbusters kind of get, like, cock-blocked by the city, like, 5 times in the film.
But the exposition about how it comes back from number one is great. Where they're washed up. It's a ba-ba.
I love that.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen Ghostbusters 2 or haven't seen it for a while, when we meet up with them again, it's 5 years later, and it was actually 5 years later. And I like that because they look like it's like they look 5 years older. They
suck in the guts, guys, with the Ghostbusters.
With the Ghostbusters is a great line. But like Dan Aykroyd and fucking
Venkman?
No,
Bill Murray.
No, not Jesus Christ, Igor. Help me out here.
Igor.
No, the fourth one.
Black guy.
Yeah. What's his name?
Winston.
What's the actor's name?
I don't know what the actor's name, but Winston is the name of the black guy.
It's on the tip of my tongue. Why does this happen as soon as the microphones get turned on? I can't remember anything.
And I guess we're gonna.
Anyway, they are they're doing like kids' parties and stuff for like $20 at a turn, and no one believes them. Like, everyone in New York thinks that it was a hoax. The government have told the people that it's a hoax as well, which I love as well, because that obviously comes from, like, Dan Aykroyd's conspiracy theorist stuff.
Yeah.
Did you ever listen to the episode of Last Podcast on the West where they interviewed Dan Aykroyd?
Yeah, and I'm really into Dan. And
it's one of my favorite episodes of a podcast ever.
Yeah, and they were really excited. Like, I'm so on board with all the stuff that Dan Aykroyd is up for it.
Yeah, like, I don't believe in any of it. But I love listening.
Ernie fucking Hudson.
I love Ernie Hudson so much. They're doing like kids' parties and stuff. And then, of course, things conspire. There's like a big river of ooze underneath the, under New York City, which is like a living river of evil.
And just collecting more and more because New York is just, everyone hates each other and it's just collecting.
Yeah, like, so it's feeding off like the negative energy of NYC. Which is also pretty funny. Bill Murray is just having a fucking ball in the film as well. Like, he doesn't stop. He doesn't stop. Like, in every scene he's in,
that's good.
He's chewing the scenery. Like, I know there are some issues with Bill, but I just like when you, he's just so fucking watchable and charismatic.
Like that scene where they're at the, like, one of my favorite scenes, and I said to you at the time, because I couldn't stop talking the whole way through the film, because I genuinely love Ghostbusters 2, like, so hard. Like, I love number one, but two is just great. And, you know, back in the old days, you'd have a Nokia 4210 or 6410 or whatever, and when you turned your phone on, you'd get, like, a welcome message, and my welcome message was, "I've had better, but not many. Thank you." Because when he's taking the photos of the, but like that's not in the script. There's no way they would have put that in the script where Bill Murray's like, yeah, the women love you, the men love you, but your animals love you too. Yes, yes, yes. And then the line, when the hoity-toity painter guy, he ends up getting possessed. He's like, where are you from? The Upper West Side. Like, pretty it's good. Perfect, but. There's just so many things like, oh, I just got my degree at night school. Well, it's perfect because we got arrested at night.
Yeah, they get arrested and Harold Ramis is in this one and he has a much bigger part. And the
Rick Moranis.
Rick Moranis, sorry.
Rick Moranis is so good.
And like the film is better for it. And like they're in a courtroom and there's like an established scene of the three of them. And Rick Moranis just comes flying into the next shot from the side. And it was like...
Oh, guys, are you sure about this? Also, don't forget in number one when he has the party.
Meaning like, are you sure about me being your lawyer?
And don't forget him, Rick Moranis, man. So good. But don't forget him in number one in Ghostbusters 1 when he has the party and because he's an accountant. So every time he's letting people into his home, he's like telling them about their W-20s and stuff. Like, he's like, okay, this is Jeff and Melissa. They've got a daily, a yearly income of, like, just him. Okay, who bought the dog? Dude, it's really good, Ghostbusters. Anyway, but yeah, that's
it's great.
It's great, man.
It is the podcast I love, Action Boys, have this thing where they say to each other, like, we didn't know what we had at the time.
Yeah,
we didn't know how good we had it at the time.
It's good.
This film was panned when it came out. Nobody liked it. It didn't make as much money as the first one. And I watched it the other night with Carl. We watched the whole thing.
And it stands.
And we like really fucking enjoyed it.
It stands.
I'm not saying it's the greatest film of all time. I'm not even saying it's the greatest film in the Ghostbusters franchise. But it's just fun.
It was made in 89, that one. First one was 84. That was 89. So what's that? 35 years ago. And it's still, it's not like outgrown. Like there's no like sometimes when you watch old stuff, it's things age badly, but this has not aged badly. Like, you know, when you see words, I'm just saying this for the point I'm trying to make. Like you watch old stuff, stuff made in the 80s or early 90s where they say or something. I'm getting it to a point. You watch movies like that now and go, fuck, that is aged really poorly.
Yeah.
Ghostbusters doesn't do that. Like they really had their shit together and weren't fucking around from the beginning. Like they don't do any bad. What I'm saying, that's it's good. It's a good thing.
Yeah, I think we're gonna have to bleep those.
I'm doing it as a. There's a lot of stuff that doesn't age very well, but this film, made in the 80s, doesn't have those words in it, which is rare, which is great.
Yeah.
That they were ahead of their time.
Yes. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying it in a slur way. I'm saying it as a...
Yeah, it's probably best if we just don't say the words at all.
Well, I don't know how else to put my point across.
R word, F word.
There's a lot of F words.
I think people will know what you mean
when
you're saying slurs.
People know that there's no malice in what I'm saying because I'm making a point.
I understand your point. It's good to watch something from 40 years ago where you don't have that moment of like, Jesus Christ, like I just had with you when you said it. What
were we watching where it really was like stinging?
Oh, we watched the clip of Hey Hey It's Saturday.
Yeah.
And it was just like was so fucking homophobic. Yeah, and
just the whole way.
John Farnham was involved in like the most wholesome man in Australia.
Also, can I say Ghostbusters 2 will cost $25 million to make, made $290 million at the box office. So, didn't do too badly.
Yeah, well, mate, I'm just fucking telling you what happened at the time. I remember it. People didn't like it as much. Like, there wasn't a third one.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Well, that's because their thing was, we have to write it.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Because the second one got panned so hard, so they were nervous about doing a third one.
It's really good.
Yeah, well, don't blame me. I'm just telling you what happened.
We gave him some
pizza.
Please
don't call me a slur, Kelly.
We gave him some pizza and knocked him right out. She's babysitting.
Mate, Kelly dropping these slurs is angling to get on the Joe Rogan Experience this week.
So, how should we sleep? Well, if we sleep this way, we can spoon each other. My arm draped over your body. Your arm draped over my body. But if we go the other way, your hair is in my face and I choke in the night. Hello, Dana. Dude, it's great.
Hello, Dana.
Anyway, let's go to what we were watching for this week. Ripley! Hey, Ripley! I can't stop because it's from Alien. Right. Aliens, the second one. Because Ripley, and they're like, hey, Ripley.
Do you know the story about James Cameron's pitch meeting for Aliens?
Did he say, like the first one, but I'll blow up everything?
No, he went up to the whiteboard and he wrote Alien.
Mm.
And then he turned around and looked at them and then he went back to the whiteboard and he put a big S at the end of it. And then he put a line through the S and a full stop. And then he turned around and looked at them again.
No, he didn't.
That I'm telling you, it's in Cameron's book. I'm telling you.
And that's all he did.
Yeah.
But I don't, what's the line?
Money. Dollar sign.
Oh, so he did.
So initially he put an S and then turned around and looked at them and then turned back around and put a line through the S and was like, dollar aliens, signs. Money.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, I know, right?
I thought you meant putting an S, like a dash in front of the S. And I'm like, what does that mean? Dude, that's so funny.
Alien equals S. Yeah. No.
Dude, aliens dollar sign.
Yeah.
I mean, that's very James Cameron. Like, I love the Alien films because every director's, you know, their cum shots really come out. Like, Ridley Scott, you know, it's all suspense.
Mm.
Number two, James Cameron, blow it all up. Number three, David Fincher, it's grainy, it's gritty, it's weird. Number four is that fucking French one. It's all colourful and weird. but it's that French guy that did Emily.
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 You must see it. See it. See it twice.
Dude. Boo-boo-doo-boo. Boo-boo-doo-boo. Boo-boo. Bonsoir. Boo. I am Emily. Boo-boo-boo-boo. What is every soundtrack to every TV or film whenever it goes to France? It has that same... Anyway, so we watched Ripley. It's Hello, a TV show.
I am Emily.
Hello, my name is Ripley. Bonsoir. I'm a TV show on Netflix right now. And I've got the hot priest from Fleabag in it.
Yeah, so there's a Netflix adaptation of The Talented Mr. Ripley, which was a book first. But then most people...
Adaptation.
Let's adaptate a book and have a good time.
Adaptation.
You won't recognize the book in this show. Yeah, it was a book, and then it was made into a film with Matt Damon and Jude Law. Oh my god, they're so hot. And I don't remember anything about that film. It was like a success at the time. I remember those two were in it.
Liv Seymour Hoffman, Gwyneth Paltrow was in it.
Gwyneth Paltrow.
101.9 Gwyneth Paltrow.
You're with Gwyneth and the Goop in the morning.
Actually, I didn't clue that the talented Mr. Ripley. I didn't clue that this was the same thing when I saw the
Mrs.
ad this
Ripley,
show.
You've got a talented con man.
When I first saw the thing, I just thought it was like, from the trailer, I was like, oh, this is like a con man called Ripley. This would be interesting. It's in black and white. But then when you're like, and then when he met the Dickie and the chick on the beach, I was like, oh, okay.
Oh.
I fucked up.
I've seen this before.
Oh, it's made in 1955. 1955 is the, I thought it was a bit more in the 60s, but 1955 is where it's set. And it's a story about a man who is hired, his family hires this con man to kind of persuade their son to come back to America. And he's living in Italy. And that this was shot a lot in Positano, which I have been to. It's very
Positano.
Beautiful. Positano.
Isn't that where Lena's from?
Nah, Lena's not from Positano.
From Napoli?
No, she's from some area near Tuscany. And then Dad's from the bottom. But I went to a wedding with my sister and my dad on the Amalfi Coast, and we went and looked at Sorrento and Capri and Positano.
The sweet
Santorini.
Sorrento moon.
It was all so tender. Do you know fucking Tenerina?
Massive fucking right winger.
Yeah. She's gone. Like, I just heard her interview with Charlie Pickering on ABC.
That's why.
In the morning.
Just interrupt for 1 second. Yeah. That's why fucking the whole time that Scott Morrison was our Prime Minister, he only talked about Guy Sebastian and Tina Arena.
Yeah.
It's because they're fucking like liberal people. Mm. Like, you know what I mean? It was like, well, I love these guys because they're party approved. Oh, and he also loves Dragon, as we saw his... Remember when Scott Morrison did a cover of Dragon on 60 Minutes?
All I can think of is the Late Show, or the D-Generation, when they did Dragon. We've been around for many years, no one knows our age. But when we do concerts now, they reinforce the stage.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Because they were big. Mick Molloy played the guy that ended up dying. We haven't done a decent single since Jandy Craig kicked us out. Take me to the.
Mate, I don't know if it's Working Dog's strongest work, to be honest.
Well, it wasn't Working Dog; it was D Generation at the time. But yeah, Jimmy's really pissing Damien off right now. I got a hole in my underwear.
There's a hole in my undies, Delilah, Delilah.
What? I just found a hole in my underwear. Jimmy, oh mate, he's killing him. The tone of the show it's very slow moving, but in a good way. Like, it's all black and white. It's very stylistic. I just think that he makes it very interesting. Like, there's a few things that happen in the beginning where Andrew Scott, well, Ripley, that character, Tom Ripley, he's being, you know, he's obviously a con man and he's, you know, being swifty with people and checks and that kind of stuff. And I just find it really, interesting to watch him, and they set up his character very well, that he's not a bad guy, he's not a murderer, he's not a robber, but he's a con man. Like, and he's just, it's grifts. It's not big stuff, it's small grifts that he's like, you know, just weaseling $20 out of people, which in the 60s, how much is that? $80? $90? I don't know.
More than that. Yeah. Like a couple but hundred.
He's just a little grifter. He's just, you know, it's a little grift. Grift. And yeah. It's just, I find him really interesting and easy to watch in a weird, like, Lee Harvey Oswald kind of way. But yeah, I find it
I wasn't blown away by this show. I thought, I mean, I liked it. It wasn't bad. It's probably, I probably enjoyed it more than most stuff that we've watched recently. Because I think it was making a serious effort. If we're comparing it to like A Gentleman in Moscow last week, like, it's
100 times
the
better.
The tone of it and the subtext is so much more relevant for what's happening in 2024. It's an interesting novel to adapt now of like, you see how destitute he is and like that he doesn't want to like just sign up for the grind and feels like that he's destined for some, or, you know, that there must be something more. And the son of the wealthy financiers or whatever they are, industrialists, is the same. Like, he's moved to Italy. He's like, he doesn't want to work in his dad's factory and shit. And so in a way, they've both managed to work ways of getting out of the
That's an interesting take.
Which is, if you go on TikTok at the moment, it's all people think and talk about is ways to try and not be wrapped up in the system, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it's a much more interesting fit. Like, to me, it shows the sign of an intelligent writer and a empathetic artist to be making something like this now and exploring that idea rather than what we watched last week, which was what will happen to the millionaires when the revolution comes.
Yeah,
you know?
And I definitely feel like with this show here, and both were based on a book, but I feel like with Ripley, better than last week, where I feel like it really did, like, even though this first episode was slow to introduce things, it all had a purpose. And I understood that character Ripley. It really set things up in a much better way, that every character has been developed very well. Whereas with the Moscow show, I was like, hang on, who's this guy? What's happening here? Like, it was, I just felt like it was just thrown together a bit more. But this one here was good.
Also, The Talented Mr. Ripley is a genuine classic novel. And, you know, A Gentleman in Moscow probably won Oprah's Book of the Week or something.
Oprah.
Anyway, yeah, so it's good. The cast is strong. It's a nice tone. Like, it's a slow tone. So, like, don't come into this expecting Roadhouse. You're not going to get something as excellent as Roadhouse in, as this, but but it is still good. Yeah, it's great. I might actually watch more of it, I think.
Oh, I hope we do. I actually really hope we do, because I'm really interested to see where this goes. Yeah.
Yeah, I would recommend it. Three grumps.
Three? I'm going to do 3.5 because, and the half is because it's got the hot priest in it from Fleabag. Don't you think?
No, I don't. Don't judge. I don't do my judgments based on how hot the actors are. Unless Ryan Gosling's in it.
I mean, he's pretty hot, right? He's pretty hot.
I just go through stages of having crushes on talented people, you know? And, like, once I saw him do the fucking I'm Just Ken thing at the Oscars, I was like, ah,
dude,
man, I can't. I love Drive. Drive is one of my favorite films of all time, and it gets dismissed as, like, a tone piece and, like, a mood piece, and it's just Ryan Gosling driving cars. It fucking isn't. It's a masterpiece in a tension building, And then the payoff at the end is so brutal.
I've got to watch
it. And so intense, and it says a lot about masculinity and maleness and stuff. And it's always really interesting to me that it's men who dismiss films like this.
Mm.
And it's usually the, like, woke... It's, like, the guys who, like, will brand themselves as, like, woke lefties and stuff. Mm. But then they get the complete wrong end of the stick of any film that, like, dismantles masculinity. You know what I mean? Because they don't get it. So things like Fight Club, Drive, they look at films like that and go, oh, it's for meatheads. It's like,
what's Drive
no.
about?
No. Essentially, like, there's this... So Ryan Gosling plays a getaway driver and he falls in love with the actress from Brilliant Young Thing.
Brilliant Love?
No, Brilliant Young Thing. She was in that newspaper film that you watched about the two women breaking the Me Too story.
Oh, Carey Mulligan.
Yes.
Oh, I love her. Oh, so I should watch this. I love her.
She is in, like, an abusive relationship and, like, Ryan Gosling falls in love with her and then they start to have a relationship but the ex is still around and stuff. But then there's also, like, he's, like, getting mixed up more and more in, like, mob activities with his driving and stuff. So, like, there's just this, like, slow build to, like, what ends up being a really graphic. And he, like, the whole thing about it is that he doesn't want to get sucked into the underworld. He doesn't want to be a part of this anymore.
I'll watch it next week so, and I'll talk like, about it on next episode.
Yeah, we can do that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'll watch it on my own.
So, he's trying not to – I'm not going to – spoil it for you, but essentially he's trying to get out and he's going to do a couple more jobs and then he's out. Like, okay. So
like
typical
Bullet Train
sort of thing. Yeah, but it's a lot more serious than Bullet Train.
Okay, right, I'll watch it this week.
It's fucking great. And for some reason, the last couple of years, people have started going, Drive fucking sucks. It doesn't. So I've loved him since then and Lars and the Real Girl.
Lars and the Real
and, like,
Girl
he
is
just
stupendous.
It's so interesting that of what makes good film, good actors or good directors or good films is just taste. People having good taste of making good decisions. And I don't think Ryan Gosling's made a bad choice.
No.
With films.
If you read the
script
for
the
Lars and the Real
years,
Girl, would you, like, reading that script, you'd be like, this is going to be weird. Like, people aren't going to receive this very well and everything about it is... On paper, like, I'm sure it was a great script, but when you tell people what the film is about, it's about a man who falls in love with a sex doll. Like, it's dismissed automatically. It's kind of like on the same vein of The Lobster, where it's that slow kind of burning show, movie, that makes you just, you can't look away. It's so interesting. You can't look away, man.
Mm.
Man, yeah, Ryan, I don't know why we started talking about it, but I put this Andrew Scott, I put him up there with Gosling.
What?
Everything he touches, he is a chameleon and he is, I can't look away. Because every decision he does, every blink, every point,
every blink you make.
Even when he like, there's an
every
element.
Choice you
there's
make.
A bit in Ripley where he stole a really nice pen off someone.
Every piece you play, every comment you play, I'll be watching you. That's Callie singing about.
So he grabs the
pen. Can't you see?
And it's a really nice pen. And even the way he just like.
It was a nice pen, actually.
Yeah.
I said
the guy,
that.
And the guy.
Honey, didn't I say it was a nice pen?
Yes. Even the Italian man in thingo said bene pinatari or whatever it was.
Or whatever it was.
Yeah, right?
Yeah,
whatever
I'm not
nice
sure.
pen was. But my point is that you don't know he's stolen the pen until you see the scene where he just takes a pen out of his jacket like he's owned it his entire life. And there is just such an accent in the way that he pulls out the pen, gently takes the lid off, signs his name, Tom Ripley, puts the lid back on, every very small, slight movement is on purpose for that character. That's what Andrew Scott does, and he's exquisite. It's delicious. Delicious. 3.5 at the moment, and we'll see how
delicious.
We go. Okay. All right. That's it, guys. You give it 3. All right. Well, we should keep on watching this and do a wrap party for this TV show, okay?
Na, 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 na.
Man, this guy was like getting all sooky 2 seconds ago because he's like, can we please finish this podcast? And now look at him. You're smirking. Yeah, you're smirking. All right. Thanks everyone for listening.
I'm smirking.
Tell every your friends.
Yes, indeed.
Love
I'm
you
smirking.
Very much. I really Would appreciate agree? All of you people listening. Please share, tell your friends. We'll try and promote it a bit more. I'll try and do some more ads for it. I feel like we're growing all the time and we'll grow more when people know about it. Because we're just a bunch of dickheads that like to talk in a microphone.
We're just a couple of
all
dicks.
Right, I love you. Bye.
Talking about films. I would like to
Now you want to go come back
into
like the real world.
I would like to say something.
Hurry up.
We're just a couple of dicks.
All right, I love you. Bye.
Thanks for listening, guys. We really appreciate it. As Kelly said, if you can share the message, that gets out to more people, and it means we get the podcast out to more people, and that's great for everybody. Also, we have a Patreon. You don't have to get involved in that, but we do have one, and I realize every week that I don't mention it, but we do have it. So it's just a donation Patreon, $5 a month. It helps us keep the lights on. Don't have to do it. But the thing that you could do that helps the most is rating and reviewing on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. That gets us out to the most amount of people. But until next week, thanks for listening, guys. We love you very much.